Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Greece is one of the most important economies in the world, and that's not because of its size, where it's just middle of the pack, even within Europe, but rather how it has influenced the modern global economic landscape in more ways than even the country itself probably realises. Global trade, which has become one of the defining characteristics of our modern world, is overwhelmingly handled by ships from just one country, Greece. Greece is also at the centre of tensions between the most powerful military alliance in history, and this otherwise unassuming country has contributed, and perhaps challenged, a lot more than that as well. Of course, today Greece is as well known for its economic challenges as it is for its beautiful islands and historic landmarks. The country has been the poster child of national mismanagement over the past two decades. From its peak in 2008, it was the epicentre of the Eurozone crisis, as badly thought out plans in this country rippled across the entire region, causing a decade of stagnation in the world's second largest economic entity. Now, while Greece is not exclusively responsible for Europe's economic troubles in the 2010s, it did play a big part, and it certainly felt the brunt of the slowdown. Before 2008, Greece was one of the fastest growing major economies in the world, with a GDP per capita that tripled in just 8 years. The country was capitalising on the new Eurozone to take advantage of its highly desirable tourist destinations, natural resources, and shipping infrastructure. It was also building at a rapid rate as money flowed from the government as well as local and foreign investors who all wanted to carve out their part of what was predicted to be an ongoing economic miracle. But of course, it wasn't, and the debt of the country and its people had incurred to grow at such a rapid rate came back to bite them when the cash dried up after the global financial crisis. The country was one of the worst hit by this global economic shock, and a lot of the economic factors that had allowed it to grow so quickly also contributed to its rapid decline, with economic output halving in the country over just 5 years. Beyond headline economic metrics, unemployment hit almost 25%, contributing to significant political and social turmoil. But that might now, after 15 long years, be starting to turn around. Growing any economy in a sustainable manner is incredibly difficult, but regrowing an economy that has already been rich is in many ways much harder still. Despite this, in the first time in over a decade, things are starting to look good for Greece thanks to a combination of assistance from its peers, stable economic management, and other global shocks that have strangely worked in its favour. If Greece can regain stable economic growth, then it will also serve as a great template for other economies suffering from prolonged economic difficulties. So, what caused the Greek economy's massive boom and bust? What caused its economic stagnation to last for so long? And finally, what are the factors that are starting to turn these challenges around? Once we have done all of that, we can put Greece on the Economics Explained National Leaderboard.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. On our show, we help listeners like you make the most of your finances. I sit down with NerdWallet's team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. We answer your real-world money questions and break down the latest personal finance news. The nerds will give you the clarity you need by cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. We don't promote get-rich-quick schemes or hype unrealistic side hustles. Instead, we offer practical knowledge that you can apply in your everyday life. You'll learn about strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. And you'll walk away with the confidence you need to ensure that your money is always working as hard as you are. So turn to the nerds to answer your real-world money questions and get insights that can help you make the smartest financial decisions for your life. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
The economy of Greece wouldn't get as much attention as it does if it wasn't for the rapid growth it experienced in the early 2000s. There are lots of countries in the world that are doing far worse than Greece by almost every economic metric, but the tragedy and subsequent intrigue about this particular economy is because, for a while, it looked like an unlikely success story. Unfortunately, the development of the Greek economy in the early 2000s was mainly centered around all of the right industries for all of the wrong reasons. Shipping is one of the core industries of Greece. Since ancient times, this region has spread its influence over the oceans, and that has carried through to the modern day. Greece has the largest merchant marine fleet in the world, and only one other country, Japan, even really comes close. Almost a quarter of all global freight capacity is based in Greece. The country built this lead in the aftermath of the Second World War. At this time, Greece had been devastated by occupation, and most of its infrastructure lay in total ruin. To make matters worse, a power vacuum formed after the German forces evacuated from the country, and fighting broke out between Greek power blocks. Now, of course, this period is incredibly complex, and the details are best left to the actual geopolitical experts on our sister channel Context Matters, but from a purely economic point of view, developing industries within the country at this time was going to be incredibly difficult, because most of the country's resources were being dedicated to just rebuilding what existed before the war. There was an opportunity, however, to develop a national industry that wasn't strictly within the nation itself, one that wouldn't be at the mercy of crippled infrastructure and political unrest. An industry that would actually benefit from the conditions of the post-war period, and that was, of course, shipping. After the war, there were thousands of ships that were used to ferry supplies for military efforts that no longer had any use by the world's navies. These surplus vessels were purchased by emerging shipping families who had mostly fled the country during the war and had become established in the USA. Having US dollars made it easier for these families to purchase US ships, mainly a class of vessel called Liberty ships, which were the basic cargo ships used by the Allies during the war to ferry supplies across the Pacific. To this day, Liberty ships remain the most mass-produced ship of all time. At the height of the war, US shipyards were building three of these massive vessels every single day. After the war was over, the Allied navies no longer needed these vessels, so they were practically given away to surplus buyers based in the USA, and even though the Greek families that had moved to the US during the war were going to use these ships for Greek shipping companies, that was good enough for the US Navy so long as they reserved the right to commandeer them if war broke out again. The details were fascinating, but what it all meant was that Greece was in a perfect position to capitalise on the global trade boom right as it was getting started at the end of the Second World War. The only problem was, this industry kind of sucked. Maritime taxes for ships registered in Greece was very high, as were the salaries demanded by Greek sailors. The Liberty ships were also made with a quantity over quality mindset, and they were prone to snapping in half after too many rough crossings of the Atlantic. Of course, with the benefit of hindsight, it's clear that Greek shipping companies did figure out a way around these problems, but it's how they did it that says a lot about the nature of the Greek economy, even to this day. Their first step was to phase out the Liberty ships for custom-built cargo transports made by the shipyards in the UK that were desperate for work after the end of the war. The next step was to ditch the Greek flag registration and sail their ships under the flag of a country with no taxes on maritime activities. These are known as flags of convenience, because since ships aren't tied to one place, it really doesn't matter where they are registered. For the same reasons, they also ditched the Greek crews in favour of whoever would work for the lowest cost. Another business practice that Greek shipping companies became infamous for was not being too concerned about what was being shipped or to whom. Even today, while Greece accounts for a massive share of the global shipping fleet, it's really a Greek operation in name only. Most of the ships trade foreign goods under foreign flags between foreign countries with foreign crews, all to make the most profit possible for foreign investors. A lot of Greek shipping isn't even managed from Greece anymore, as operations have moved to countries like the UK, Singapore, and even Norway. Greece's presence in the EU is really the only thing keeping these ships in any way related to Greece. The industry has massive influence in the country, and they've used that to push favourable trade conditions and considerations for their ships, while only contributing about 1% of economic output. Now, the story of Greek shipping and how it evolved with global trade over the past half century is fascinating in its own right, but the way it grew so large while providing so little real value to the Greek economy is something that is common amongst not just shipping, but most of Greece's major industries. The growth boom of the early 2000s was mostly driven by construction. The adoption of the euro also helped to develop other industries like tourism and manufacturing. The Greek drachma, which the euro replaced, was a highly unstable currency, which made planning long-term business deals or even a holiday surprisingly difficult. The real benefit of the new currency, though, was that it made borrowing money from abroad far easier. The economic boom of the early 2000s did about as much real good for the Greek economy as its shipping industry. On paper, it looked very impressive, but in reality, most of the benefit was not going to the country itself. Most of the debt taken on was put into developing infrastructure, which could be a good investment, only most of this infrastructure was not going to support long-term sustainable industries like manufacturing, services, or even tourism. They were going to support the development of houses for local and foreign investors to speculate on. In the years between 2000 and 2008, net inflows of foreign direct investment accounted for as much as 2% of all GDP, which means, in a sense, every year, 2% of the country's total output was being sold to foreign investors. Now, again, foreign investment can be a great thing for an economy, if it's used to build out industries that will contribute to employment and value creation in the future. Unfortunately, in Greece, most of this money was going straight into buying homes on the coast. Building a home will increase economic output quite significantly on paper, because a home is a major good being produced. It's also great for employment, because building even a basic house will keep a lot of workers busy for a long time, and that's before considering the extra production that comes from building roads and plumbing systems and electrical connections to service this new home. The problem with economic growth achieved this way is that once it's built, whoever lives in that home probably won't need a new home for a long time. That home also doesn't produce anything that can be traded to pay off the ever-expanding debt that Greece was taking on to fuel this economic bubble. And to make matters worse, just like the shipping magnates, people working in these industries were not too keen on paying any taxes. This whole scheme probably could have kept on going longer than it did, but the global financial crisis meant that the new homes that Greece was busy building and selling to anybody who would buy them were worth a lot less than they were in the years before, and the country found it much harder to keep on borrowing because most major economies around the world at this time wanted as much money as they could get on their hands to support their own economies, so giving loans to a country like Greece was low on their priority list. These challenges combined to kick off the Eurozone crisis. The millions of workers that had been employed in the country's building industry were mostly out of work, the country had to impose austerity to manage its debts, and since it had adopted the euro, it couldn't even devalue its own currency to try and make things like tourism more affordable. The euro gave Greece a great opportunity for development, but it was just a tool, and like any tool, it could be used to do a lot of good or a lot of damage if not managed correctly. Tragically, the country shouldn't have even really been allowed to adopt the euro in the first place. When the currency was being rolled out, new members had strict requirements about how much foreign debt they were allowed to hold. Last month, we explored how this caused Italy to spend almost half a decade cleaning up their act to get into this club. Greece, again, took the same approach as its shipping magnates and just tried to cheat its way around entry requirements into the euro. If it wasn't for a bit of creative accounting, it may not have had the opportunity to ditch its own currency for another decade. This also meant that the debt problem in Greece in the lead up to the crisis was a lot worse than the headline figures would suggest. Either way, the decade that followed the initial crash was incredibly rough. The heightened unemployment caused more drain on overly generous welfare systems, which in turn worsened the government's budget problems. When the country made the obvious decision to lower spending on these programs and chase up on tax dodgers more diligently, it caused major social issues with demonstrations in Greek cities making headlines around the world. This also hurt industries like tourism, which remained fairly stagnant in the country over this time, despite the general growth of tourism worldwide. Now, raising taxes and lowering spending is normally the last thing an economy wants to do during bad times, because it means that there is less money circulating around the economy for the few businesses that are left to employ people and produce value. But in the case of Greece, it was a necessary step towards regaining creditworthiness, and as bad as it sounds to say, get their people to move into industries that may pay less, but will be more sustainable long term. People working in the construction industry before the collapse in particular were making incredibly good money by building the houses and infrastructure fueling the unsustainable boom. It takes time and some fiscal motivation to get workers used to making a lot of money in an unsustainable way to take up work in a more sustainable industry where they will be earning less money. But that has now happened. Unemployment in Greece is still high, but it's far lower than it was half a decade ago, and it's improving. The debt burden of the country has been managed, and thanks to a series of bailout measures from international organisations and some debt write-downs by private banks, combined with more careful government budgeting, the country is now considered creditworthy again. The global pandemic has also been, in many ways, a blessing in disguise for Greece. Sure, it hurt the economy from losing tourist revenues and a general slowdown in trade and industry, but other countries in the EU were hurt more, and the low interest rates rolled out to combat the impact of the slowdown also helped Greece get its other problems in order. Greece may take a long time to get back to the level of economic prosperity it was enjoying in 2007, but that's kind of the point. Slow and stable economic development is exactly what the country needs, and if it can recover with this more measured approach, then its economic success is likely to last a lot longer than it did in the past. Okay, now it's time to put Greece, one of the most infamous economies of the last decade, on the Economics Explained national leaderboard. Starting as always with size, Greece currently has a GDP of $219 billion, making it the 54th largest economy in the world, just behind Kazakhstan. That is again predicted to grow quite significantly over the next few years, so hopefully we can give it a better score when we explore this economy in the future, but for now it gets a 6 out of 10. That GDP is spread out over a declining population of 10.4 million people, which means it has a GDP per capita of $20,732 per year. That is a significant drop from its all-time high of over $32,000 in 2008, especially when accounting for inflation. Even though it's still roughly double the global average, it's really stretching what would typically be considered an advanced economy, so Greece gets a 6 out of 10. Stability and confidence is obviously terrible, but it's also all relative. By European standards, the country has been plagued by reckless borrowing, political instability, and general economic mismanagement, which has got a lot of global attention because it's caused a lot of harm to its Eurozone peers. Even still, by global standards, there are countries that inspire far less confidence because they are far less stable. Greece gets a 5 out of 10, which is not great, but is fair considering that it's still a democracy, still using the world's second most recognised currency, and has even made progress towards resolving major issues that caused this instability in the first place. Growth is simply a 0 out of 10 because the country has gone backwards over the last decade for all of the reasons that we've explored in this video. Industry might be the most interesting component here. Greece does technically have the world lead in one of the most important global industries, shipping. But given the nature of this industry and the influence that it's had over the country, not much of the benefits flow back into the domestic economy. Even still, with the addition of tourism, high-end agriculture, and a healthy supply of natural resources, it still gets a very strong 7 out of 10. Altogether, that gives Greece an average score of 4.8 out of 10, which is obviously not great, but might still be higher than most people would expect, which is a fantastic demonstration of all economic challenges being relative. Now, there were a lot of similarities between the Greek and Italian economy that we didn't want to repeat here since we made an entire video about Italy's economic challenges just last month, which you should be able to click to on your screen now. Thanks for watching, mate. Bye.
The world is constantly changing and transforming. Cut through some of the noise with What's New with Wired, a podcast that goes in depth on the latest news and technology and culture. Their award-winning journalism will help you make sense of what's happening in the world. Listen to What's New with Wired wherever you get your podcasts. That's What's New with Wired wherever you get your podcasts.